Good evening. None of you look wet. But I got to say, it looks like we're going to be. So, this evening I'd like, we've had sort of an ongoing discussion about some things, and sometimes the title of this is Telling the Truth. And I think it will come to light what I'm actually talking about here. It's not necessarily possessing the truth, but how do you tell it? And so our scripture reading this evening is John 17, beginning in verse 13. And he says there that this is during a prayer, but now I come to you, and these things that I speak in the world so that they may have my joy made full in themselves. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I do not ask you to take them out of the world, but to keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Sanctify them in the truth. And your word is truth. And you sent me into the world. I also have sent them into the world. For their sakes I sanctify myself, that they themselves also may be sanctified in truth. So there's a lot being said here about the truth itself. And so I asked the question, what made the apostles special? And if you look at their professions and some of that kind of stuff, there's some sense of, I'm not sure why Jesus chose these particular people. And yet, they heard the truth, every one of them, they heard truth from him and immediately were ready to follow. They forsook their lives and their responsibilities, whatever that was, for the sake of what Jesus would have to say. They took criticism for the truth, even persecution for the truth, even, and I'm saying this before Jesus dies, they still will bear up under the things that he was bearing up under. Okay, and Jesus says that they are not of the world. And I believe that much of what we've just said here is why he says that. As I am not of the world, they are not of the world. Sanctify them in truth. So that is a conclusion of the matter. So when I ask myself the question, what does it mean to sanctify them in the truth? And it's not that I don't understand the words. It is that he is praying to his Father, you sanctify them in the truth. And so there sounds like there's like an outside element here, that God can give us more than simple knowledge of the truth, but sanctify them in the truth. So you consecrate them is what he's saying. Separate them from the earth. And I think that the sense of that is that you're going to be, okay, that their use on the earth is not going to be for the earth. That they are consecrated as apostles for a mission that is God's mission. Sanctify them for the mission. Keep them in it and not to be distracted away from it. And so, in my sense, I believe that's the definition of being holy. Is that I put the things of God before the things of life. And it is God that sanctifies us because he's told us these things are important. Secondly, it means to separate them for the work they are to do. So here they have a job to do within the kingdom. They are separated from worldly concerns on how they're going to be received. It is not simply that everyone is going to welcome us into their home and say, thank you very much for coming and we love you for telling us the truth. No, there will be those that will oppose them mightily, and we understand that they illustrate what it means to be holy no matter the reception. So that their manner is going to remain consistent while the world's manner may change in front of them. And their job, of course, is to announce the salvation of God. And so they're not only dedicated to the truth, they are set apart for it to become known, but also according to it. And that they offer their conduct, that they believe the truth by their conduct. I believe what I'm talking about. That there is a sense that they must preach it. I cannot be silent about these things. I think there's a lot of people who think that we are called, using the word called, for a purpose like this, and that preachers are called. I think every Christian is called under those terms to not only understand and gain the truth, but then be compelled to share why I believe what I do. And they acknowledge and bow before the source of the truth in all things. Okay, so now I've told y'all that I have a book from a guy that used to be in advertising. His name's Roy Williams. He wrote this book, which are just daily sheets he would send out of ideas about advertising. And I have another one for you tonight. It says, "When the truth is not persuasive." Now, I just want you to listen to this because it is about advertising, but I think it's going to have a direct application on us. I know it will shock you to hear this, but telling the truth is rarely persuasive. This unfortunate fact has caused many business owners to invent a whole new language of deceit. The language is often excused as advertising. So, deceitful advertising is common today because the honest business people of yesterday assumed that all they had to do was tell the truth about their superior products. The result all too often was a dramatic loss of business to competitors who used deceitful advertising to sell their inferior work or goods. With his family's future on the line, the reluctant response of the honest business person was often to fight fire with fire. So anyone who believes in this philosophy has obviously never tried to put out a fire. The tragic result of fighting fire with fire has been a nationwide inferno of deceitful advertising. If the public won't buy it for $20, we'll mark it to $40 and sell it for half price. And you know that's going on, folks. You know that's going on. Okay, so the business owners knew they couldn't fool all of the people all of the time, but they were able to make a nice income fooling some of the people some of the time. Now, these business owners are frightened because it's getting harder to fool any of the people any of the time. The real tragedy is that so many honest business people abandoned the truth in their advertising. You see, it wasn't the truth that was ineffective. The mistake was in assuming that it's enough simply to tell it. If you want the truth to prevail, you must cause people to realize the truth. This requires much more skill than is required simply to tell it. And so, there's something of a moral to this story. Oh, by the way, honest persuasion is the water that will put out any fire, is his conclusion. And there's something of a moral to this article. It says, truth that we are told is truth we may not accept. The truth we have realized is the only one we own. So now what's being said here is that we can come with the truth and we can tell the truth, simply tell the truth, okay? And because people have been deceived so many times in so many ways and in so many ways that we fell for it, that they don't believe even the truth anymore because they can't determine truth. I don't trust my own instincts toward truth. And so what they want is that I need evidence. And that's very much why our country today is so involved with credentials. Well, you say that you know something about foundations. Well, what are your credentials for saying that? And what are the tests that you have run to do that? And we question to find how you arrived at your viewpoint. And then I begin to choose whether or not I believe what you said. There are those that, we see this in the car industry all the time, that will tell you that something is wrong with your car that's not really wrong. It's a very easy thing to fix. They're going to make a lot of money. And if they think they're in front of someone who knows nothing about cars, they will take advantage of the customer. And so once you've had that done once or twice and you find out that could have been fixed for $20 and you charged me $200, excuse me. My trust of you, I will never be back here. But what it also does is I don't trust anyone in your profession anymore, even the ones that are honest. And that's the point that we're really trying to make. So that for me to believe it, I now have to have some personal proof that makes me feel like what I was told is the truth. So the sense that I must believe it is necessary in order for people to follow the truth. So this is how the gospel was delivered to us. Very simply, the credentials are, a God who cannot lie is the one who wrote this. Well, that's pretty good credentials right there. And so consequently, we count it as the truth. And we know that. That the reasoning behind the truth is reasonable because God is reasonable. He created us. He knows how we think, how we act, what we need, what we do. And so He puts in place the things that so that we can understand, and that it is understandable, meaning that most of the time the gospel is simple. Not that there aren't some complex things, but most of the time we're able to understand. And then it is declared by those who were there, meaning the apostles, and experienced the change of value to and action at the time of Christ and His resurrection. Those men were witnesses, and they were witnesses in a personal way. And so many of the stories that we read are about things that happened to them firsthand. And they tell what happened. They tell it openly, honestly, straightforward. And we know with God's help of them remembering what happened exactly, that we have confidence in the stories that we have. Okay. So that the truths we hear today, do they need to fit the same parameter? The answer is yes. I will listen to those stories. I will consider them. And then there's some that cause you to think that, you know, I'm not sure that's possible. And then after you come to understand the power of God and all that has gone on with that sort of thing, then we come to say, well, that's impossible with men, but that's not impossible for God. And so the story of Jonah that we've used before. Okay, so here we have something like that. But you see, when we hear the truth today, we believe because we trust the author of our truths. Many times that's been your parents or a teacher or experienced professional that informs us of things that we did not know or increased our understanding. We expect the truth to be unaltered. Now that's one thing, when I talk about the truth, then not the truth with some parameter to it. The truth is unalterable because the truth can stand on its own. All right, so as we're included in our belief of the truth are all our personal parameters for belief. So what makes something believable? I'm thinking right now of talking to toddlers and the things that we could get them to do because they believe whatever you tell them. And it's their innocence is so much fun. And we enjoy that the innocence that's there. And yet there's and then there are times that we play under those terms. For instance, all right, I'm a little bit ashamed to tell you these stories but they're true. I worked at McDonald's and at the Florida Avenue store in Tampa, Florida, and I was actually the night manager of the store, or became the night manager of the store. And we had a milkshake stir. This is back in the days when we would put it on a spindle and spin it up and put some ice cream in there and whatever the flavor is going to be, and then spin that thing up, and it would be you were to get 11 ounces worth of milkshake for your money. And we actually measured the weight of it so that it would be. Then we would whip it to full. Well, our milkshake machine would sit on a stand up here, and where it's easy to get to, shoulder high. And we had a switch down here that turns the whole machine on or off. So they would take a new employee and turn the machine off and tell him to make a milkshake. He said, "It's not working." "What's not working?" "The machine's not working." And they would say, "It's not working." And they would come over and with their leg, they would flip the switch and they would whip it up for him. "Seems to be working to me." And they flip it off as they walked away, and he couldn't get it to work. So then they started telling him ridiculous things of what would do it. We had a tape sign for a hamburger sale on the top up here. And they said, "Well, if you pull this little sign down like this and let it flip back up, it comes on." And it would, because they flipped the switch without them knowing. It's cruel in a certain way, but there's also a sense of, you know, what has a taped-on plastic sign got to do with electricity? You would also think somebody would have enough sense to recognize somebody's yanking my chain here. But no. And so this would go on until someone told them, generally me, "All right, that's enough of this. There's a switch right here. Look, you turn that on and it turns the machine on. Now that's what you do, okay?" Their face said it all. Why does that new employee believe another employee? Because of their experience, is it not so? Yes. Yeah, we believe that they're going to tell us the truth, and we believe that they're going to help us when we're trying to learn, and then all those types of things. And so we are set up by our prejudice and of people playing fair and being nice and doing those kinds of things. But we have parameters for belief. The next time something happens to this particular employee and something's not working, do you think he just accepts what's told to him? Of course not. We just taught him not to. We might have been playing, but the truth is that way. We must look then at the truth first with no filters on it, and then we apply our filters. And that's what I'm making the point of. Every one of us understands what the words say and what it means. We try to bring that about. We were talking about some of that this morning in application. And then I began to put in, well, what does that mean? Okay. If it stands, we believe. When I put it to the test, my test, well, what about in this situation? And I'm talking about in a personal way, not in the absolute truth of what is the truth. Okay. I said all of that to start this point. When you go to teach the truth, then, what do you think people are looking for? Well, if I already know Jesus Christ, or I think that I do, do you understand that it's not going to be easy to shift perspective, as we were talking about this morning as well? How do I change that with someone who thinks that he knows Jesus Christ, when in reality he is not necessarily or is perceived incorrectly? Do any of us believe that we can simply go out and just tell the truth and someone said, "Look, I'm sorry, but if you'll look at the sentence structure of this and you read it this way, don't you see that you have missed it? He who believeth and is baptized shall be saved." Can you not understand what he who believes and me is, you know, ties it to it, plus baptism equals salvation or the forgiveness of sins. Can we not understand that? And yet those that have been taught that that is not the case are very resistant, even though that is, in my estimation, very plain. So, do honest people simply accept what is said in our society? That's the second thing. Not talking about religion, but simply talking about truth, we have been deceived in so many different ways. Do you think that an honest man just accepts whatever is said on the first pass? They do not. I do not. You do not. We check for where's the hidden catch? Always. Do deceivers that intentionally deceive hear the truth when it's spoken? Would someone who is great at being a deceiver, does he ever hear the truth And the answer, by the way, is actually yes, because Simon the sorcerer was one of those guys. He's a guy that was a deceiver, and when he heard the truth, he understood what it was, and I want some of that. But he still had these misunderstandings. That's why he tried to buy the gifts of the Holy Spirit, and that he was corrected. But being corrected, he was corrected. And that's the thing, is that the truth does that. When an honest businessman, when they resort to deceptive practices in advertising, what does it teach the honest hearer? I don't trust anybody anymore. Do you see? I hope you're seeing where this is leading. We need to be truth tellers, and we need to be sure that we don't use deceptive anything. Why? Because so many other people do. It is, and when we ask that question of what is it that makes a true Christian stand out from those that claim to be Christian that may not be as pure as they should be, how is that, how do you distinguish yourself? This is one of those ways that by the truth, we tell the truth in such a way that it can be heard, it can be understood, it can be explained, and it all comes from God, not me. This is not my opinion is better than yours. This is what God said versus what you said. And when we can make that, we help people to believe in truth again. So that honest hearers, as they doubt everything, have come to the place, and they have too, that I will hear something, but then I'm going to test it for its rightness. And I think that's a good thing. You should be doing that even when anyone speaks. Most people that would consider becoming part of this congregation will come for months before they actually decide to become members here. Why would that be? Because, let's just take those. They're coming from somewhere that was religious and believed in Jesus Christ, and now they have come here. Whatever it was that would take them from where they just left was something that didn't quite feel right. They are coming here and it feels right, but I gotta look to see if there's another hidden something here that was hidden over there, and that's what they're doing. It is not that they don't believe the truth or that they don't want to hear. It is that we have, our society has taught these things. So, what do you think that teaching the truth will take to an individual? What's it going to take to teach the truth to an individual that is afraid to hear and just accept? And I want you to understand, we've said these things before. That number one, I need to tell the truth, and I need to understand that this is going to take some time. Before we're able to make, we can make a point of the truth, and it can be accepted, but it's going to be questioned, and it's going to be, well, why is it this way, or why is it that way, and we're going to come to that place, and that's going to take some time to get that done. And if you were lucky, you could do that in one sitting, but most of the time it doesn't. It takes more than that. And then I said, okay, so I believe one point of what you believe. What will they do? What's the next step? That the next step had better be another good, honest truth that is provable so that they can hear it, see it, understand it, and agree again. And it becomes a series of little truths that cause them to believe what you're saying. Do we understand that? We all understand that, don't we? Because that's how we act. So let me ask you something. When you're going to teach your children, what do you think you have to do? You have to tell them a truth. You have to show them the why. You have to show them how it works in so many situations. Because that's how they're going to defend themselves in the future, and that they are going to be convinced that what we do in our household is the right thing to do. And when you're in matters of opinion, guess what? We say that this is a matter of opinion. Renee and I chose to have God's rules and house rules. We actually listed them that way. Okay, this is God's rules. And God's rules are something you can understand and follow and do and this and must do. And you will answer to God for that. And then these are my rules. Okay, and in my rules, you may not think that they're fair, but they're going to be enforced. And you understand, I didn't put them in the category of godly things. I put them in the category of household things. And the balance of that was received well. So the series of truths accepted then leads to the honest heart obeying God, and that's what we are looking for. So there's a couple of points that I really want to make about these things. First is that our hearers are correct in being doubtful of the truth the first time they hear it. We need to understand that. They're not being obstinate. They're not being putting walls up. What they're doing is that they are doing just what they should be. They have heard so many things that are wrong. They are going to test the spirits, which we are told to do. They have been taught carefully by Satan to push away those that declare declare a truth other than the one they know. And remember, that's how it has always been, that surely I have the right answer. I studied this. And yet, there are those that have been deceived. Secondly, we must understand that we must have more than the first step in teaching others ready to go. I need to know what the second step will be before we enter it, so that there's a smooth transition towards those things, knowing that there's going to be multiple singular truths that lead to overall acceptance of the truth. So when Jesus says in John 17:20, I do not ask on behalf of these alone, meaning his apostles, but for those who also who believe in me through their word, that they all may be one, even as you, Father, are in me and I in you, and that they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you sent me. Here is the goal of why we speak the truth in love. That Jesus prayed that the apostles be one in their teaching. That he then prays for us that believed what they said and are still believing what they said. Okay, that we will hold the truth and that it will be believed again and again and again. That he prays that we, the believers, may be in God, in his truth, in his consistency, in his love, in his forgiveness, that we may declare the surety of following Jesus Christ. One day I'm going to bring a sermon. I believe that it is unity in a congregation that declares Jesus. I don't believe that singularly, but I believe that. That unity among the brethren says something, because we don't have unity anywhere. And so all of man's institutions have battle after battle within them, but this one, you see, should not. And so we ask the question, will God be with us if we want to tell the truth and do it? He will. Will he give us that help to persuade men? He will. Will he help us face the fear of not telling the truth well enough? Let me tell you, that is a Satan idea. If you know the truth, you can tell the truth. So tell it. Okay, and just be kind and not force the truth. Don't use it that way, but instead intrigue people with it. And he will help us on that. And therefore, he says, go and teach the gospel. And as though we know and that the Great Commission was for the apostles directly, I think that the 70 that went out were given the exact same mission. That they were told to go and do what the apostles are doing. And that as the scattering happens from Jerusalem and scatters out into the world, those that knew of the truth told that truth wherever they went. And they changed the world. Can we still do that? I believe we can. And so I encourage us to do so. If you're not a Christian, be one. Become one. Now is the day and the time. And if you're struggling with something, it's just as important to expose the things that make you afraid and and let us help you through prayer and through wisdom that we have of those that are around you. If we can help you, won't you come as we stand and sing?